Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2014. Lecture 16, delivered on March 25, 2014. The title of this lecture is Capital Budgeting Decision Making.
Today, capital budgeting decision making. You're seeing now something about what much of finance does. We decide whether projects are go or no-go. You saw in the exercise on marginal cost of capital that we will go with projects only if they meet certain criteria. One of them is that the project has to begin and end with a return that's better than what the cost of paying for the project is. It's a hardcore decision-making process. Now, in our own lives, a lot of times, you know, something probably isn't the best idea, but you go with it anyway. You know, yeah, I'm sure you've done that. You've seen a bank with a lot of money in it. It wasn't a good idea to rob it, but you did. Okay, maybe not. You've seen a really attractive lady, and she smiles at you, but she's with a 300-pound bodybuilder. You know it's not a good idea to go over and say, "What's up?" But you do anyway. And, you know, you spend some time fighting all your teeth. And but in business, we don't make those kinds of slippery decisions. We have to go with what the numbers tell us. And that's sometimes we try to say, well, I just got a gut feeling about this. And usually what you go with and what you find out was that gut feeling was just the bad tacos you had the night before. And you're sorry. We actually do stick to the numbers. And even if it's a great sounding project, if it's not a go, then we're not, if the numbers don't say go, we probably are not going to go with anything but what the numbers have told us. Now, in that marginal cost of capital problem, you saw that we already knew the returns that we're going to be pulling on the project. And so that gave us the ability to then compare it to the cost of capital at that level. And we had our way of finding out whether we would take the projects or not. In this part, in this lecture, we're going to, let me make sure this actually... Yeah. For those of you who don't know what happened last time, I wrote on it, and you notice that one is actually gone now. And I've got these email messages I haven't opened. No, seriously, noobs. I mean, you know, that dragon lady who handles these machines. And capital budgeting, and we're going to look at how we make the decisions. There are old ways that used to be done. And I mean, I actually have once in a great while run into a little company run by some very old people, and they'll still look at, well, we'll go with it or not go with it based on these old methods that are kind of like folklore. One that was around for a long, long time, and I don't know why the book even brings these up anymore, but some textbooks even mention them. Maybe they're just trying to say, you know, don't do this. But there was one that was called a payback method. And essentially, it asked, okay, how many years is it going to take for us to pay back the amount that we invested in this based upon our estimates of the cash flow? So let's say that we kick in a $500 bill, and the thing is going to go $100 first year, that's year zero, and $200 the second year, and let's say $300 the third year, and in the fourth year, it will kick 200. Now, this old payback method, and I'm not going to test you on it, but I do want to expose you to it because I've seen it, and when I, well, It's been some years since I was in consulting, but in my consulting years, I did see it once in a while, was still around. The question was, okay, in year one, 100. By year two, we've got 300 cumulative. By year three, we've got 600. So the payback period on this cash flow for the 500 was a little under 3 years. And they say, well, what do we like? We like projects that pay back within 2 years. We'd reject this. Or we like our projects to pay back within 4 years. We'd accept this project. It's just an old, old method that was done by business people. Its deepest flaw is kind of obvious. These are amounts of money in the future. They're not worth that now. You're comparing now money, $500 out of your pocket, to money that is not worth that much. $100 a year from now isn't worth $100 now. $200 in 2 years is surely not worth. So they were comparing apples to oranges doing this. But they did it that way. And I'd love to say, well, they were completely stupid, but I see financed professionals doing things now that just make, no, that doesn't make sense, but they still do it. It's kind of like there's always this folklore. Have any of you ever heard of the five-second rule? You drop something on the floor, and if you pick it up within 5 seconds, you can eat it. I mean, that's, yeah, what is the virus or the bacteria? Well, 5 seconds he's got into. No, I mean, we have these rules and they're not real, but we still use them. But the payback method has fortunately kind of disappeared from the environment. Let me go very quickly. Now, in the old days, this was a really hard thing to do. Because it was tedious because you had to use tables and all these big dense tables to do the calculations, and there was a lot of adding and subtracting and multiplying. Now we've got calculators to do this all really fast. Let me show you one. Let me do a really simple thing. Like you invest. $100 in a project that will yield $100 in the first year. $40 in the second year. No, I'm sorry, not 100. Make that 50. 50. Gee whiz. 50 in the first year, 40 in the second year, and 20 in the and 20 bucks in the third year. Is this a good idea? You'd have enough information to do a payback method on this one, but in a more sophisticated method, we're going to need to have a way to discount a number so that we can discount the 50, 40, and 20 back to the present so we can use a present value. We're just going to have to do that. And then we're going to compare that to how much you kicked in. Now, there are a couple different ways to get a number for this discount rate for the present value calculations. What is done these days, one of the ways that is used these days, is to actually use a capital asset pricing model. And what you do is you use a beta that is on some company that has a similar project as its only project. In other words, okay, we can use the CAPM to get a discount rate. Well, that means we have to have a beta, and we look around for a company that is specializing in this kind of project, and we say, well, that would be about the beta we would need. And then you can work your way to the CAPM like you did for that stock price problem. And you can get a beta, get the R sub M minus R sub F and times beta and then plus R sub F and all that. Well, let's just say we did something like that, whatever it was. Assume cash flows from this project are discounted at 8%. Now I'm going to do it a little bit more tedious way first, and then I'll show you how you can do this really fast on a calculator. There's actually a function for it. Okay, so what we have is we've got a timeline. We've got zero, year zero here. And that's where we're going to kick out $100. Then in year one, we get in $50, positive $50. Year two, we get in positive $40. And year three, we get in positive $20. So what we're going to do is we're going to telescope each of these back, roll them back as a present value. So we'll have the present value, and then we'll take that present value, pull it back. We'll do this present value and pull it back. And then we'll add those two together. And then we'll pull this present value back. And we'll add that one. And we'll compare it to $100, which is better. The present value of the future expected cash flows or the $100 you're throwing in. Now, I'm going to just go through and do those present values very quickly here. The present value of $50 one year out. You might want to make sure you can do this. I'm just going to do this with the 50 times 1.08 to the negative first power. Forgot to put in my parenthesis. 1.08, didn't really even need that, to the negative first power. Well, that $50 comes out to be worth about $46.30 as a present value, $46.30. The $40 two years out to the negative second is worth $34.30 right now. Kind of ran my room up there. Okay, and then the $20 three years out has a present value right now, 1.08 to the negative third, of $15.88. So let me write those down here. So we have negative $100. That's coming out right now. And then we add in $46.30, $34.30, and $15.88. Was that 88 cents? Yeah. Okay, now add those up. 8008, and then 3 and 3 is 6, plus 8 is 14. One up there. I'm just going to do these numbers. One up there is 7, 11. 11 and 5 is 16. And then 4, these numbers right here. I'm adding these three numbers right here. And then 4 and 3 is 5 and 3 is 8, 9. Is that right, 9648, or is that 10648? It's 9648? Okay. Let me try something here. Okay. Apps, finance. Apps, finance, 7.
MPV 8, comma, negative 100, comma, and then I'm just going to work out 50, comma, 40, comma, 20, close by. Did I do something wrong here? Huh. 8, negative 100, 50, 40, 20. Oh.
And I get $3, negative $3.52. That is called the net present value of the project. If it is negative, you reject the project. If it is positive, you accept the project. It's right at that. No matter how negative, no matter how positive, it's a binary decision. Yes or no.
Let me try something here. Apps. Finance, and then 7, and then I'm going to go 100, comma 8, comma. Now I'm going to show you a really quick way to do it. 50, comma 40, comma 20. Entry. Now I want you to go to your apps. The hell is that? Apps, finance, the NPV. And I want you to go apps, finance. Yeah. Yeah. How do you get what? That's the net present value. You do these, that one would have been $50 times 1 plus 0.08 to the negative first power. That one would have been 40 times 1 plus 0.08 to the negative second power, and that one would have been the $20 times 1 plus 0.08 to the negative third power, the old present value formula. Or you could have just divided by 1.08 squared. Just the old net present, plain old present value of a cash flow. 8, and I'm going to do something real quick here to make sure I can do it before I set you off to it. Comma, negative 100, comma, open braces, 50, comma, 40, comma, 20.
You know what? Yeah, it'll be a little off. Okay, go apps, finance, go down to 7, or just click, or just hit the number 7, and hit enter. Now, what's going to happen when you do that? You're going to go apps, finance, 7, which is NPV, it says NPV. Now what will happen is that you'll come back, when you hit enter, you'll come back to the main screen and you'll see NPV with an open parenthesis. Now the first thing that you key in is the 8%. And as a percent, don't key it in. These calculators let you just don't put in 0.08, for heaven's sakes. And then from there, you're going to put a comma. And then from there, you're going to put in the negative sign, 100. That's your initial investment. It's always the discount rate
comma, the initial investment. And then you key in a comma, and then you're going to tell the calculator, here comes the positive cash flow. The way you tell the calculator, here comes the positive cash flow, is that you open up braces. Open the brace. That's second parenthesis. Don't use a parenthesis, use the brace. And then what you're going to do is you're going to key in 50, comma, 40, comma, 20, that's a comma, and then you're going to say, all right, that's the end of the cash flow. You close the brace, and then you close the parenthesis. Don't forget to close the parenthesis that you started the problem with. And hit enter. What do you get? Well, that's pretty close to what I got doing it by hand, negative 3.52. The difference there was I was rounding to two decimal places in the lump sum. Yeah.
What did you put in the calculator after the eighth and comma?
Say that again?
What did you put in the calculator after the eighth and comma?
The eight and then the comma was the negative sign.
Oh.
It's a negative. You see, calculators know the difference between a minus and a negative. They don't even teach it. I don't think anyone in this class was ever taught the difference between a minus sign and a negative. Anywhere in your arithmetic. But there actually is a difference, and calculators, just like computers, know there's a difference. A negative is what's called a unary operator. A minus is a binary operator. It works on two things. So you have to tell a calculator, use the negative sign to tell it something, not a minus sign. But there you go. A fast way. Now notice that it's kind of like, well, that was a little faster. But think if you had a like whole bunch of cash flows. I mean, that would be a real pain in the butt to do each one as a present value. This way, you got the whole thing done in one shot, and you can just say, no, I don't think so. Okay, so now, let me show you something that happened here. The discount rate and the NPV. Now, whoops. Let's say that that's, oh, each one of those is, let's say, a dollar, okay? Each one on the NPV axis is a dollar. Now, when I use the discount rate, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 8. I got a net present value that was about $3.50 negative. Try a discount rate, go back. I want you to, if you haven't cleared your calculator, I want you to hit, there's a way to call back up a formula that you've keyed in. Some of you probably already know it. Do you know how to bring back a formula so you can change it on a calculator on one of these? Yeah, second entry. So go second entry. Well, first turn on the calculator again. Second entry. You got it? Now go back up and change that 8, let's say, to a 6. That would make those cash flows out there worth more now. Let's see what happens when you do that. 6. And then go back down and hit enter. Oh, that was close. 6 got us negative 43 cents. Well, fine. Let's try 5. Second entry, I'm going to go back up and say, what would have happened if I had done 5? Oh, at 5%, it was a positive net present value project, a buck 18 or something like that. At 5%, it was slightly positive.
that was $1.18 you get. Now do second entry one more time just to see if this is consistent. A 4%. $2.84. Almost $3. Well, look at that. Isn't that interesting? The net present value function, as you increase the discount rate, the net present value function drops. So at low discount rates, you are more likely to accept projects than at high discount rates. And that's the way it will always work. Choose a low discount rate, you're going to probably accept, or you're more likely to accept. Let me put it that way. Choose a low discount rate, and you're more likely to reject. Now, so this is the net present value method. We get a discount rate, and then we just key it into the calculator and find the net present value. If NPV is positive at that discount rate, we say yes. If NPV is negative at that discount rate, we say no. Yeah. More likely. See, like in this one, if I had chosen a low ball, like a 4.5%, I would have accepted this one. Just in general, since the function is downward sloping like that, you know that as you lower the discount rate, you're getting closer and closer to positive territory. And that will always be the case no matter what the project and cash flows are. There's always, you're coming closer to the positive territory. So if you want to be sure you accept a project, just accidentally choose a discount rate of like 2%. If it can't cross it, if it doesn't work at 2%, that's a bad project to begin with. You got the idea? Okay, now watch something interesting. I want to show you something. Anyway, one more time. This is old school net present value. This is how we do it. And a lot of companies just do it this way to this day. They'll just look at what the projected future cash flows are, what the cost of the project is now, and they just run the net present value calculation. It's even in Excel, it is such a common function. And I've seen so many spreadsheets, company spreadsheets, and as I'm looking through the formulas, yep, there's net present value right there. It's done all the time, and it's still the bread and butter. Now, as I said, there's another method. It's a new age, new wave, weird-ass method, but not too many companies are doing it yet, or unfortunately, one way or the other. But anyway, let me show you something. You see this point, see this place where the discount rate where the project hits zero NPV? There's a special name for that. It's called the internal rate of return. Well, what I did was I said, well, let me try 8%. 8% got me a negative, 8% got me a net present value that was like negative $3. And I tried 9%, and that got me like negative something worse, I think.
So
no. Yeah, the NPV, like for example, at $8, rather, 8%, I had about negative $3. Right, and then I tried, well, let's try 7%. So when I did 7%, I came up with like negative 43 cents or something like that. So 7, negative 0.43. And then when I did a 5%, I got, what was it, like, I don't remember, it was a positive number. So I can graph 5% is an NPV of, yeah, the x-axis is the discount rate you use. And the y-axis is the resulting NPV, yes, the money. So the x-axis is percent, y-axis is the dollars that come out of the machine. So in other words, it's just like the old input-output they taught you about functions somewhere when you were learning algebra. Input the discount rate, output comes the dollars. This internal rate of return here is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. The internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value of a project
zero. And I'm going to say that one more time. The internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. Now, I repeated that three times because on the second test, I could ask that as an essay question. What is the net present value? If you tell me exactly that, you get exactly all of the credit. Okay? If you tell me something else, like if you go on the internet and you find Phineas and he tells you he's going to do it wrong. You remember Phineas, right? He'll tell you a really phony definition. That's the important thing about these. There's no nuance. There's no creativity, writing creativity. An internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value of a project zero. Now, why would we care about that? Because if I know the internal rate of return, then you could tell me a discount rate, and I can say right away whether it's a go or a no-go. Watch. I'm going to show you how to find the internal rate of return. It will actually do it on this calculator. Go apps, finance. Now, if you go clear down, you'll see number 8 is IRR. Apps, finance. Wait. Finance. And 8 brings you back to the original screen as IRR. Now here's what you do. You came back to the IRR on the main screen with an open parenthesis. Tell it the negative cash flow, negative $100. And then put in a comma, and then say, here comes the cash flow, open brace, here it comes, 50, comma, 40, comma, 20, close the brace, that tells the calculator we're done with cash flow, close the parenthesis, we're ready to calculate, and then go ahead and get the number, comma, open brace, now let me do it instead of yakking here, comma, 40, comma, 20, close the brace, close the parenthesis, and you get 5.73%. And if you look up here on the graph, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, yeah, that was it. In other words, once I know the internal rate of return, you're my boss. Woman, you're my boss. I don't like you, but, you know, you're so mean in that whole thing with no parties for birthdays. That's just. But, okay, you say, all right, here's the cash flows. And I quickly find the internal rate of return. I said, what discount rate do you want, ma'am? And you say, 4%. I say, accept. Well, how did you do that? Well, that's below the internal rate of return. So I know that the function is positive there. And you say, slap me. And you say, don't talk back to me. Okay? Do you understand, though? Because you gave me a number that was a discount rate that was below the internal rate of return, I know that it's going to be accepted. It's a positive net present value project. Because I know that any discount rate I use below the IRR is going to have a positive net present value. I don't need to know what it is, because net present value is yes or no. If you had told me 9%, I would have said it's rejected. Because I already know that 5.73% is the place where it goes underwater. The internal rate of return gives me, essentially, the upper down fulcrum point. Now, I want to try this on you. Let me try this on you here. Invest $250,000. Now, here's your year cash flows. Year one, $80,000. Year two, $70,000. Year three, $60,000. Year four, 50,000. And year five, we have a little salvage value at the end. We had $20,000. And then we had some we could sell off the parts for $5,000. Whenever I tell you there's a salvage value at the end of a project, just add it to the last year's cash flow. Again, if I say there's a salvage value to a project, just add it to the last year's cash flow. You follow me on that? Because essentially the project is dead. At the end of the year, I'm going to sell off the stuff that to whoever would be want to buy the stuff. And in this case, the project finished with $20,000 last year, was dying away. I made 20 grand off it. And then at the end of the year, I close the project out and I sell to some company the used equipment for 5 grand. Now, I want you to find me the internal rate of return. Just do it on your calculator. Go ahead. And then we're going to talk about what you found. And I'm not going to tell you what to do. If you need help, just find someone beside you who looks intelligent. And we're going to work this through. And I'm going to do it too. Now, once you get the answer, I'm going to just ask. You get the answer?
Yeah.
Okay. No, don't say but. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll just see. You got it? Y'all good? Okay, now. I'm your boss. I want you to find me the NPV and give me a decision. I want you to use a discount rate of 5%. Is it a go or a no-go?
Go.
Yes, it's a go. I want you to use 7%. Is it a go or a no-go? I'm impressed, except with that pink. Really pink in a calculator? You know what? What did you get for the internal rate of return? What did you get?
5.38.
So any discount rate I would give you below 5.38 would come up with a positive net present value project. Any discount rate I give you above 5.38 is going to give you a negative net present value project. That's all there is to it. The IRR is the fulcrum of this investment. And I don't know exactly what the NPV function is. It always depends on its steepness and its curvature always depends on, you know, the circumstance of the project, the cash flows. But I do know that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I know that the function, whatever it looked like, it crossed at 5.38 from positive to negative, from the first quadrant to the fourth quadrant. If you're into algebra and all that. So that's a convenient way. Now, on a quiz or an exam, I would ask it both ways. I'd ask you to find an NPV, just so you can show me, and I'd also have you find an IRR. Now, it sounds like the IRR method is the one to always go with, but there's a problem with the internal rate of return method. It's purely something that comes out of mathematics of functions. That internal rate of returns work fine unless you have more than one switch in cash flow. Normally, we have the money negative and then the money positive. Cash pay, cash put in, cash comes out. One switch. And internal rate of return is fine for that. But if there's ever more than one switch, then NIRR actually doesn't work. It gives weird, the internal rate of return function does this. It goes up and down across the axis. So depending on where the calculator would look, it would find the root of the function, which might, it just basically means nothing. So if you have projects, if you ever have a project where you've got money you put in, then you're going to get money out of it, and then a few years later you've got to put more money into it, you can't use the internal rate of return method. Just go to the net present value method. Just go right away to it. Just go right there. But as long as you don't have to worry about that little problem, then IRRs are just fine to use. Now, traditionally, we recommend against the IRR method just because of that possibility of switches in cash flows, just sort of as a gut, use your NPV method. But I really don't have too much problem with IRR. That marginal cost of capital problem I gave you, those numbers along the side, those are IRRs. And I mean, those you're going to see a project, the one that I give you on the second exam, on the marginal cost of capital problem, is actually a real, it's a modification of a real life problem, a company's real numbers, and the numbers that I have, I'm giving for the return on the investment for the investment opportunity schedule, those came right out of IRR calculations. So it is used, it is popular. There is a weird possibility. It's rare, but sometimes you'll have, let's say you do the NPV method on a project, and then you do the IRR method, you might find out that the answers, the decisions you come up with aren't the same. But that's kind of rare to do, and I'm not going to talk about that here because I've honestly, in real world, I've not seen it more than once in my life. But I am going to point out one thing to you here. Real quick on this point. There's this idea, first of all, that we can always take on as many projects as we want. No matter what, we can always take on any project that comes to us. And it's all just a matter of whether it's a good project or a bad project based on NPV or IRR analysis. But there's actually, and what we say is that those are, companies can just take on as many projects as they want. And they have to kind of deal with how far they want to go and all that. There's once in a while a situation where two projects that you're going to look at, they are mutually exclusive. You can't take them both on. So both of them would look great. They both would have positive NPV. Their IRRs would be above hurdle rate that you've set for projects. And yet, you can't have them both because they would, you can't do them both at the same time. A great example of that, there's many examples of it, but there was a city that could build an industrial park or they could build a sports arena. Why couldn't they do both of them? Because they had only one piece of land. So it was either going to be a sports arena or it was going to be an industrial park. The sports arena came out with good numbers. The industrial park came out with good numbers. But you couldn't have both of the projects at the same time. There was some idiot who said, well, why don't we build the industrial park on top of the sports arena or put the, stop that. Innovative idiot. But, okay, what do you do if you've got two projects that are both go, but you can't do them both? So let's say, and here's where the real problem comes in. This is not so uncommon. This is not so uncommon, as I was kind of saying it is. But look, NPV of project one, NPV of project two. The NPV of project one
was about $45,000, and these are made up numbers. The NPV of Project Till was $38,000. Well, okay. Obviously, we'll take Project One. We'd love to see they're both positive. They're both great. Why? But there was a little problem here. The internal rate of return of Project One was 7.65%. The internal rate of return of Project Two was 8.66%. 8.86% it was. You see, the Project 2 was going to stay positive NPV up to higher discount rates. You could beat that one up 5%, 6%, 7%, 8.5%. The thing was still a positive go. With that first project, that thing pissed out about just before 8%. It went negative. That gives you the clear idea that in some ways, Project 2 was a stronger project than Project 1. Even though Project 1 comes out with a stronger net present value, Project 2 sort of has this staying power. I see you two in a bar fight, and I'm deciding how I'm going to put my bet. Now, you can deliver just a hell of a wob. You know, it's like I'm watching you, and your arm is swaying. Whoa. Whoa. And there's teeth flying, you know, used food coming out the butt port, the whole nine yards. But you... Now, you're getting slapped around, tossed, and bounced, but you just keep getting out of and you're staggering, but you keep going. You're more resilient. He is just an animal, a beefcake, obviously. Look at those rippling muscles. Damn, those are nice. Oh, anyway, okay. But you've got staying power. Do you see that the bet isn't as easy then? I've got to put my money on one or the other of you. Because you're beating the crap out of each other. You know, I got some potato chips and I got my beer and I'm enjoying this, but I got to put my money down. So you have to make a decision. Which way do you go? Do you go with the internal rate of return, which would be you, or do you go with the net present value, which would be you? And I don't think I've ever heard this example used by anyone else, this kind of an example, but it's real. It's a real thing. And that comes down to company policy. If you do have, these would be mutual exclusive. Understand, these are mutual exclusive projects. If you run into a situation like that, you go to company policy. Which do we go with, NPV or IRR? Generally speaking, and I think the book even says this, that you should go with the net present value. And most companies would take the net present value approach to it. Because of, it's really... You see, in modern American corporations, it's all about how much money, how quickly. It's cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. So the fact of the matter is that you are going to be able to finish the fight sooner. Get me my money, my bet back. Even though you might be the winner, it's going to... I said that wrong. You're the one I would put the money on because I'm going to get my cash back faster. You, I'm sorry, I don't have all night. I've got other things to do. I've got to go over to the YMCA, okay? Or something like that. So even though there is that staying power, the modern American corporation thinking is we get it done. Big cash flow, more likely that I'm going to see big money coming in quickly, so I'm going to take the NPV method over the one where there's a display of staying power in this company, okay? And what I'm essentially showing you here, and I'll show you this kind of like on a graph.
and this is probably a pretty bad way to show it, but on those two graphs, this is IRR2. This is you in the red shirt. Got staying power. See how it's not huge on the top, but it just floats. It rides down. This would be like the glider. You're very likely to get to the ground. This is more like the Malaysian plane. Oh, goody, no one's ever going to find our carcasses being eaten by sharks and all that. But it's a hell of a ride down. I guess that's kind of insensitive considering, you know, there's still grieving people. Did you see the Malaysia airline? They said, well, we think we found the plane, so we want to fly the bereaved families out to, we'll fly you for free out to Australia so you can see your dead bodies of your loved ones and all that. No, I don't want to join him. I loved him, but no, kiss my ass. I will take a train across the ocean. You lose planes. That's not good. Okay, anyway. I brought up one last point here. I snuck in a word there, a term called hurdle rate. A lot of companies, and this is very common, companies use the term hurdle rate. And what it's like a company policy, and sometimes I've found that the hurdle rate was in place for like 10 years, 20 years. Why are you still using that hurdle rate? Times change, economics change. But here's what is meant by a hurdle rate. It's a company policy. It's a company policy that any project that has an IRR above the hurdle rate is a go. Any project that goes south before the hurdle rate is a no-go. So they would say, well, our hurdle rate in this company is 4.5%. So if you come in with an IRR of 6%, yeah, because it's going to go negative NPV well above the company's threshold. But if my project comes in at 3.5%, that's below the company's threshold. See, it's going to hit negative territory before the company's hurdle rate. So essentially, a hurdle rate looks like this visually. You've got this hurdle rate that the company sets. Let's say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Let's say that the company's hurdle rate for projects is 8.5%. That's the hurdle rate. The company says no project is accepted unless it exceeds our hurdle rate in IRR. So let's say we get a return on investment of a project. Its IRR, its NPV line looks like that. The company would say no to that one because it goes negative below the company's hurdle rate. But let's say we have a project like this. That's a go because it goes negative after the company's hurdle rate. It's surprisingly common. It's kind of a flawed thing to the extent that, well, you know, you're doing is you're setting kind of like an arbitrary number. We ain't going to accept nothing that gives us an IRR less than this. Well, that just means you might be rejecting some projects that are decent. And of course, it also turns into a corporate politics kind of thing. A company, you might have some aggressive people who decide on a hurdle rate that's a very high number. In other words, they're pushing the company to accept projects, only those projects that are risky as hell. You follow the idea? If you set your hurdle rate very high, you're going to be saying no to projects that have internal rates of return that are low, but they're good projects and they're safe projects. By setting the hurdle rate at a higher number, essentially you're signaling we want to be a risky company. Now, that might sound fine for some people in the company, but it might not be good for others and investors who might get kind of shy about that.
An interesting thing about these hurdle rates is that sometimes they are, like I said, I mean, you'll see a hurdle rate. It was back in the day. This company had a hurdle rate, and they just the finance officer said, "Well, our hurdle rate is 12 something percent. Don't remember. I know it was above 12." I said, "That's a hell of a high hurdle rate." He said, "Yeah, we haven't changed it since the 80s. Well, the 80s was a time when all interest rates were stupidly high. You know, that was the time when interest rates went insanely high. And they set it there during that time. So, of course, they were going to have a high hurdle rate. They had, since the 80s, been rejecting projects, 8, 9, 10, 11% projects that were darn fine. And they were sitting there with this bag, this portfolio of things they were doing that were risky as hell. And the first thing we talked about, well, not the first thing, but one of the things we talked about was, let's get that hurdle rate down, or maybe stop worrying about hurdle rate and looking at projects in terms of net present values and internal rates of return on their own. Instead of setting some corporate policy, we will accept nothing that returns less than this. That's just, that makes it too easy and puts you into a bad situation. But anyway, that's the idea of a hurdle rate, and you might very well run into it in a company that you work for if you do anything in the numbers part. But as far as the quizzes and exams go, I need you to know how to calculate net present values and internal rates of return, understand the difference between a mutually exclusive projects and projects that are not mutually exclusive, which decision criterion is popular in the United States in American corporations, and understand the concept of a hurdle rate. What its advantage is that it's sort of like, it's just so easy. We just look at IRRs and we say yes or no based upon whether they are above or below the hurdle rate on IRR. But understand both the benefit of it and the challenge it presents. And other than that, that's all I have for you. I thank you.